Welcome to the Campbell Conversations. Two recent national issues in which the city of Syracuse has figured prominently are sanctuary cities and the reaction against the Trump administration's recent temporary travel ban on travelers from seven countries. Joining me today to talk about these issues is Syracuse Mayor Stephanie Miner. She has appeared on the program many times in the past. Mayor Miner, welcome back to the program.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
So let's start with Syracuse being a sanctuary city for illegal or undocumented immigrants, and then we'll talk about the travel ban issue. And you've spoken out repeatedly on both of these, on the sanctuary city issue in particular. What, first of all, just briefly, if you can, what specific city policies make Syracuse a sanctuary city?
So a sanctuary city is really a term of art. But what makes Syracuse a sanctuary city is that I have told the police department that they are not to inquire about somebody's immigration status in their interactions with people. So what that means is that we don't ask people, where are your documents, or what are you a citizen, who are you from, where are you a citizen? And the idea with this is twofold. The first is that we want people to cooperate with the police. And if they feel like they have to tell them their immigration status, but maybe, you know, they have a cousin or a brother or a neighbor who is undocumented and that the police are going to go and arrest them and send them, they're not going to cooperate with us. So it's first and foremost, it's about continuing to try to enhance the community relationship with the police officers so we can have the police really chase bad guys and bad girls, not enforce federal immigration policy. That is the responsibility of the federal government. There is a lot of case law, strong case law, that says the federal government cannot force a local government to handle or enforce its civil law vis-a-vis immigration law.
And just to be clear on this, then the quote-unquote sort of standard way this would go if one were fully doing what the federal government is asking is when there was some kind of suspicion, there'd be a question, and then at that point, those fingerprints would go to the FBI. Is that the process?
That's one way.
And then they would come back and say, we want you to detain this person for 48 hours or longer until we can begin the process of deportation. I just want to sort of walk this
through.
Sure.
So that is one way it could happen. Let's say somebody gets arrested, and then they get arraigned, and they get fingerprinted. In Syracuse, at that point, after they get arraigned, they become the custody of this criminal or alleged criminal is the sheriff's department. They have the decision of whether to detain or not detain. It could impact our police officers if they – when they're asking and talking to somebody, if they say, okay, what's your name? Where do you live? Hey, where are you from? You know, what, are you a citizen or are you not a citizen? If that became part of the regular questions that, you know, police officers ask people when there's been suspicion. But part of this also, I think, is when we think about the potential implementation of this, think about what we would be telling our police officers. When you stop somebody and you don't – you have suspicion to believe that they're not an American, well, what does that mean? Does that mean they're not white? Does that mean they don't speak English? Does that mean they have an accent? All of the sudden, in a very diabolical way, you are really enforcing this view that an American is somebody who is white and speaks English perfectly.
So you bring up the county sheriff, and that's something I did want to ask you about with this. So for illegal or undocumented immigrants in the Syracuse area to be free from the local authorities detaining them in order to be deported, which is the big thing that is the concern, I understand. So the county has to be participating in the sanctuary city noncompliance, so
at
to speak.
At least in that in part that. Of it, when they cross their law enforcement responsibilities, they would have to be part of it.
So have there been any clear policy statements at the county level about this?
None that I know of. But let me also say none that I know of. And I have asked directly for a number of months now, do we have an issue with undocumented people committing crimes? And the answer is no. And I asked, you know, I asked my police chief about it. I've asked police officers about it. I've asked neighbors about it. I wanted to know objectively and anecdotally. And the answer is no, we don't. New Americans, immigrants, undocumented or documented people are most often victims of crime. They're not perpetrators of crime. And what the president has done in this focus on sanctuary cities is really taken the grief of some parents and used that to exploit a stereotype that is not accurate.
I'm Grant Reher, and I'm speaking with Syracuse Mayor Stephanie Miner, and we're talking about sanctuary cities. So you mentioned the president withholding of federal funds to the localities and the cities that are not complying or saying they're not going to comply with these federal requests for detention and for forwarding on this information. That's withholding of federal funds. That's an option for the president.
And it's not legally an option. The courts have said you can't penalize a local municipality for refusing to enforce federal civil law, such as immigration. There are laws on the books. So he currently, through executive order, now they could change the law and they'd have to change a lot of laws. But as an executive order, he can't say, I'm not going to give Syracuse a Justice Department grant because they are a sanctuary city. If he does that or says that about New York City or Chicago, then there's lots of precedent that says you can't do that, and we will challenge it in court.
Okay. All right. That was going to be one of my questions for you. So
let me be a little bit also more nuanced about this, just to be clear. I think part of what has to be understood in this discussion is that the president and his administration have been antithetical to urban public policy. So this idea that there's going to be all this money for cities that he's going to grant or give to us to help solve our problems is not consistent with who he is, what he said, or the people he surrounded himself with. Just the opposite. Ben Carson being the primary, is going to be – looks like he's going to become the department head of housing and urban development, and he has been on record as saying he doesn't believe in affordable housing. So the repeal of Obamacare without a replacement, that's going to deeply impact people in cities and people in the city of Syracuse. So there is a – what I have been referring to as a constellation of bad public policy for cities and urban areas that the Trump administration has said that they're going to institute. So this idea that somehow, city of Syracuse, we're not going to give you these millions of dollars because you're a sanctuary city. The reality is the Republicans in Congress, have consistently cut back funding for affordable housing, community development block grants, lead testing, water infrastructure, you name all of those kind of good public policies for cities in particular, and I'd say the United States in general. So this is, this is just a way to kind of have a disguise the fact that they are act in contrast to the best interests of cities across the United States.
You anticipated my next question on this, which was going to be, was there a concern about money that hasn't necessarily been already negotiated and promised and contracted that you might not get, but you address that. Let me ask a different piece of the funding question, though. So there is some money at stake for Syracuse. You mentioned a Justice Department grant, for example, and the one that occurred to me was the I-81 project and the federal funding for that. Is that in a different category for the administration's ability to hold that back?
Again, it would depend on what they said, and it depends on where that money goes. The president could not legally tell his administration, do not give the city of Syracuse money for I-81 because they are a sanctuary city, the way the law currently is. But also, I-81 is a surface transportation project. And that money may go to the state of New York and not come to the city of Syracuse. So in that case, we wouldn't be impacted by this. The Congress may change the law and say, we change all of these laws to reflect the fact that if any city is a sanctuary city, they will no longer get any federal money. They can change the law if they want.
So on this issue then, you don't know how a legal case would necessarily turn out if you bring a lawsuit because you're not getting federal money that you were promised already. In some cities, this is a really, really big chunk of the budget, 10% in New York City, I understand, for example, and a lot of money here too, again, the I-81 project. So my question on this is, on an issue like this where there's a lot at stake for the city and there's some uncertainty there, and given the fact that the city has struggled under financial stress, which you have talked about in previous programs in detail, would it make sense to try to, on this issue, do some polling or surveying of the citizens to gauge their views systematically. And where are they on this? Because there's a lot riding on this.
Sure, there is. I would tell you that I think the old-fashioned poll is that the people of the city of Syracuse voted me to be their mayor and voted me to make these kind of decisions. Look, is it a risk? Of course it's a risk. But I think that I understand and was elected to represent the values that we have as Syracusans. And I can tell you that the values that we have as a city, and you know, we were a sanctuary city back in the abolition movement. This is not something new to us. This is who we are in our blood and in the grit of who we are. And also, that being said, having a couple of years ago, I wrote a letter to President Obama and said we'd welcome border children. And that was an incredibly divisive issue. And with sanctuary cities, everything that has come into my office, save one phone call, has been positive. So I can't keep up with the emails of people thanking me. I can't keep up with the cards and the letters and the phone calls. It's just been overwhelmingly positive. And also, because I am a politician, I always look at the return address. And it's overwhelmingly positive. And there are lots and lots of people in the city. I went to Syracuse Stage last night, and I probably had 15 people come over and thank me for being a sanctuary city.
You're listening to The Campbell Conversations on WRVO Public Media. I'm Grant Reher, and I'm talking with Syracuse Mayor Stephanie Miner. Well, let's turn now to the temporary travel bans to the United States that apply to seven countries. The public reaction to this executive order has been widespread across the country, and it included a protest here at the Syracuse airport at which you spoke. And I understand you've also been organizing additional public conversations about this issue. So first question is, why do you think this particular policy is generating such a strong response?
We in the city of Syracuse per capita accept the fourth largest number of refugees in the country. So there are a lot of refugees and new Americans and immigrants who are part and parcel of our community, of our city. Since 2013, 9 of the valedictorians of our city high schools have been English as second language learners. That's another way to track immigration. So these are people who are our neighbors that we see, that our children go to school with, that we're going to their restaurants now and they're opening hair salons and, you know, their places teaching them English. And it has all been positive. And then the other part of it is that we as Syracusans all think back on how our families got here. They came from Italy or Ireland or Germany. And that's also a really important part of who we are as an ethnic community. And so when you saw this president's order come through and it targeted people that we knew, you know, we have a tremendous number of lost boys from Sudan who came here through tremendous turmoil and upheaval. There was a story about a woman who came from the Sudan who's a model for Vogue now and also works at Marshall's. So this idea that the generalizations that this executive order made about refugees are completely at odds with what we know to be true as Syracusans and who our history is as Syracusans.
Now, from a political perspective, though, do you think that some of this protest might be a proxy or a receptacle of sorts for a more general resistance and disgust on the part of many Democrats against President Trump?
It definitely could be. I would tell you that, I don't know if it was the week before, 10 days before with the Women's March, I was in Seneca Falls for that. And there at that point, when I was there and they announced the attendance, they said 8,000. I think it probably was 10 or 12. There was the line to get off the thruway was blocked back onto the thruway as far as the eye could see. So at I thought that, like, this is a proxy for how the president is conducting himself, how he's handling himself, you know, kind of being very divisive and harmful and using pretty ugly language. But with the airport movement, if you will, or the people at the airport, when I looked around and saw them, there were a lot of people that I knew. The people there that I knew were from different walks of life. They were not the people that would normally show up to a political rally.
Did you see any Republicans there that you know this is a Republican? I mean, I'm wondering whether it's kind of a Democratic phenomenon.
It's, you know, I don't I think I saw people there who are, I would say, conservative Democrats and people who are independents, people not political. And I should also say I had no part in this rally other than I happened to be flying back across the country from an innovation event that I was speaking at in Utah. And I landed in Detroit and my phone blew up and there were people saying, would you come and speak? And I said, sure. So I didn't organize it. I didn't have anything to do with it. It just kind of worked out that I was stepping off the plane in time to speak at it. So it was really it was a grassroots movement that other people organized and did in a very quick way.
If you've just joined us, you're listening to The Campbell Conversations on WRVO Public Media. And my guest is Syracuse City Mayor Stephanie Miner. Well, there's something else that's related to this in perhaps a more tangential way, but I wondered whether you could reflect on it. These protests were about openness and freedom to locate, the kinds of things you've been talking about, and America being about those values. I mean, that's on their face. That's what the protests were about. But on the ground in this nation and in the Syracuse area, the fact of the matter is that housing patterns are very segregated, economically and racially. Poverty is highly concentrated, and there's not a lot of travel between a lot of those neighborhoods. So I wonder whether there's anything to reflect on about this moment in terms of how we treat and view our neighbors down the road as well as those from other lands.
I hope so. I think there is. I will tell you, both from the Women's March and from speaking at the airport, these were incredibly diverse crowds, diverse by national origin, diverse by gender, diverse by age, I suspect diverse by party. And there's really something that was touched, the zeitgeist or the third rail of politics, to have 1,000 people come out on a Sunday in January to the Syracuse airport. They were parked along the median. I mean, it just was – I've been involved in politics and government a long time, and there are times when you touch it and it – you know, all of a sudden it's this collective sense of – this is not who we are. This is not what I believe in. And that's clearly been touched. Now, whether it is sustainable, I think, is something that we're going to see. I've been through similar things. People point to Occupy's. Oh, this is just Occupy. And they petered out as well. And they might even say, Mayor Miner, you crushed them. But I will tell you that the energy and the authenticness of the people who are involved in this movement – it far surpasses Occupy, and it really goes to who we think we are as Americans and what our values are. And for that reason, I'm very hopeful about it.
You mentioned earlier in the conversation about your suspicion of promises of money for the cities from the federal government, things that might be lost with the sanctuary cities. Coming back to that in a way, in a much more general fashion, what are your concerns for how cities more generally are going to fare under the Trump administration? Do you have a set of specific worries or concerns?
Yeah, I'm deeply concerned about it. So cities are the primary generators of economic development in our country. In a knowledge-based economy, the kind of ideas that come out and build economies or build products are coming out of cities. And they are very dependent on and count on export-import businesses and this idea that you can intellectually move products back and forth. With the president talking about Mexico the way that he is, you know, insulting Australia last night, his idea that you got to lock down the borders because the bad guys might get in. And the way that he's doing it with such huge generalizations also means you're going to lock down the borders and trade. And that is going to really starve cities. It's going to starve the United States, but it's first going to be felt by cities who are dependent upon that. The other, we are becoming a more diverse country. And if you are not finding public policy solutions to deal with the housing crisis in urban centers. Sometimes it's a housing crisis dealing with the fact that you don't have enough access to it for middle-class families in places like San Francisco and New York City. In places like Syracuse, we don't have enough of it for affordable housing. And they've just – that's not an issue for them. And so you're going to see a proliferation of homelessness, and you're going to see economies also start to constrict because people won't be able to get jobs because they won't be able to afford to live in those places. If they don't do real investment in mass transit for cities, particularly along the East Coast, the megalopolises of Washington, Boston, New York, Philadelphia, and do Amtrak funding, there's a tremendous amount of gross domestic product that comes out of that megalopolis, if you will. And if they shut that down because they say that's where Democrats are and that's where Democrats vote and we're not going to spend money on mass transit because that's a blue thing, you're again, you're going to see the economy really start to falter.
And finally, just a couple minutes left. It seems like almost every time your name comes up these days, there's the discussion of what's next for you politically. And if you could bear with me on this, I want to try. I know elected officials hate these questions, but I want to try a couple of approaches to this. What's off the list of possibilities for you in terms of next steps?
Being mayor on January 1st of 2018.
We know that one.
Yeah, that's off the list.
What about returning to the practice of law in a private capacity? Would you consider just being a lawyer again?
I would. I my skills would be pretty rusty, I think. But I think I might be able to, you know, write a summary judgment motion again.
Is there anything you're remotely giving thought to that you might be willing to share?
I'm not. I think it's very bittersweet for me. Mm. It's been such a privilege to be mayor of the city of Syracuse. It's been a privilege to represent the people of the city, the kindness that they have shown me virtually every day. It really is exceptional. And I've worked with terrific people. I enjoy going to work every day. I laugh every day in the office. And the idea that is not going to be there on January 1st is very sad for me. Now, that being said, I also had started to think about the fact that, you know, George Washington was right when – he was right about a lot of things. But his idea that executives should have 8 years, there was really something to be said about that.
Mm. I have one last question in this line of questioning, and this may sound wacky, but I did want to ask it. It's possible that the district attorney's office here may become an open seat. There's been discussion of Bill Fitzpatrick retiring after this term. Is that the kind of position you might think about?
You know, as I said, nothing is off the table, nothing is on the table, and I think it will not be a surprise to any of your listeners that I think that office has not been – the decisions and prosecutorial discretion has not been exercised in an appropriate way for a long time.
That was Mayor Stephanie Miner. Mayor Miner, thanks so much for talking with me again.
Thank you for having me.
You've been listening to the Campbell Conversations on WRVO, Conversations in the Public Interest.
The Campbell Conversations, Conversations in the Public Interest, was hosted and produced by Grant Reher, engineered by Tom Fazio, and edited by Jason Smith. Campbell Conversations is a joint production of the Campbell Public Affairs Institute at Syracuse University and WRVO Public Media. To learn more about the program or to hear previous interviews, visit wrvo.org/Campbell Conversations.